We're talking about whether college student athletes should be paid. It's The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. No doubt you could make the case that being a college student athlete is a full-time job between the weight room, the court or field, the classroom, and then rising to the level of NCAA competition. March Madness is underway. It's big business. Networks raked in $1.3 billion in March Madness ad revenue last year. Do you think college athletes should receive some kind of compensation, whether it's a paycheck or an endorsement deal, or should the NCAA's amateurism model remain? We're at 800-642-1234 for you to weigh in. Ken Reed is sports policy director for League of Fans. That's a sports reform project. He's also a columnist and author. His latest book is called The Sports Reformers, Working to Make the World of Sports a Better Place. Ken, welcome back to the Ideas Network.
Well, thanks, Kate. Glad to be here.
Here we are, another year, another March Madness. And once again, talking about the issue of college athlete competition. So with all the money flowing into events like the NCAA and March Madness, do you hear the calls for paying players getting louder and louder?
Well, definitely. And I think the recent injury to Duke star player Zion Williamson kind of highlighted the situation. He blew out his Nike sneaker just playing. It ripped out and he sprained his knee in the process and had to sit out 5 or 6 games. And he's going to be the number one pick in the NBA draft. He fortunately is back and he's going to play in the tournament, but he was very close to possibly ripping up his knee, torn ACL or something, and his market value plummeting dramatically. So I think the situation is it's just an untenable system at its roots, this idea of amateurism when everyone else is making millions and billions of dollars and the people, the producers that are creating the product just are being unfairly compensated.
Well, let's talk Zion here for a moment because, I mean, here you have a player with a huge following, like a once-in-a-generation player, larger than life. He's got, you know, the pick. He can go out his doorstep and basically be the first pick for the NBA, millions of dollars standing right there. How do you exercise any self-control there? And you know that playing on Duke, you're going to be bringing in lots of money for the NCAA.
Well, yes, it seems strange and very unfair to me that Coach K, Duke's head coach, is making $5, $6, $7, $8 million, not sure what it is these days, and Zion gets a seat in a classroom and gets a scholarship and room and board paid for when his market value is multi-million. So I'm not downgrading the value of a college education. It's very worthy and worthwhile, but it's so far from what his true market value would be. And just the unfairness of broadcasters, coaches, ad execs, school athletic directors, everyone's getting a piece of this NCAA pie, except the people that put on the exciting product.
So the argument against athlete compensation is that many of these athletes already receive scholarships, their tuition paid for, perhaps some small financial stipends. Is that enough?
Well, no, like I just mentioned, I think there's value in that, obviously, but it's just not related to their true marketplace compensation. And I think the whole idea of paying college athletes is indeed complicated. I admit that. I mean, you'd have to deal with how do schools put players on the payroll? Is there worker compensation issues, Title IX issues, the whole gamut? So I think the clear, obvious, and simple first step is just to move from the current system to the Olympic model, where Olympic athletes, not that long ago, were considered amateurs and not allowed to take any compensation whatsoever. That was changed so that they can now get compensation on endorsement deals and get compensated for their names, likenesses, and images, just like most Americans can. And so it's a way of players like Zion Williamson getting compensated without actually having them on the Duke payroll. Someone wants to pay Zion $2 million to have his face on a calendar or a jersey, or even, you know, come down for $50,000 at the local auto parts store to sign autographs for a couple hours, that he would be allowed to do that. And that wouldn't affect the athletic department in terms of payroll or anything like that. It would just be a way for especially the superstars to get closer to what their true value is. There's a study done that Zion Williamson's shoe deal, if he was allowed to take one for Nike or anyone else, would be at least $10.5 million a year.
Mm. Talking with Ken Reed, Sports Policy Director for League of Fans. Listeners, what do you think? Should college athletes be able to receive compensation? And if so, where should it come from? You can weigh in at 800-642-1234. Email ideas at WPR.org. Ken, as I understand it, the state of California is considering some legislation that would loosen up the rules for amateur athletes in the state. What are lawmakers considering there?
Well, it's Senate Bill 206 in California, and they call it the Fair Pay to Play Act in the California State Legislature. But under this bill, college athletes would be allowed to receive compensation in a way that's very similar to what Olympic athletes can receive, basically endorsement deals or any other type of compensation that comes from sources outside the athletic department itself.
Is California the first state to consider something like this?
The first one that I know of, I mean, there's been plenty of talk, but in terms of actually having a bill that's up for review, that's the first one that I've seen.
Well, Pete from Reedsburg says the pay issue, as well as the many scandals in recent years, make it painfully obvious that the missions of our higher learning institutions and big-time college athletics are inherently incompatible. They should be separated. Let the NBA and NFL create and pay for their own player development leagues. What do you make of that?
Well, I couldn't agree more. I mean, the original problem was that we tied big-time entertainment sports to our institutions of higher learning. When you go over to Europe, they don't have anything like Duke versus North Carolina in basketball or Texas versus Oklahoma in football. The universities there are for academic endeavors, and then the elite athletes go to clubs and play in, you know, high-level club soccer or basketball or whatever the case might be. So that was the original mistake we made in this country, is tying big-time sports to academic institutions, but that's not going to change anytime soon. So I think we have to address the situation of here we have a product that is very popular and financially lucrative, and everyone's making money off it except the athletes themselves.
Let's go to Deanne now, joining us from Eau Claire. Hi, Deanne. What are your thoughts?
Hi. I agree with the caller. You know, I think we can't keep tying the playing sports and education together and then compensating for them at the college level. But why can't we take some of the money that all these companies are earning and put it in retirement for the players that are helping them make the money? So they are being compensated in the long run, but not immediately, or we're going to end up with a bunch of kids that think they can just go to college to become a professional sports player rather than earn a degree.
So put it in piggy banks for the long road ahead.
Ken, yes.
Ken, what do you make of that?
I think that's a good idea. I'd have to see how it would be organized, but I think there's a way to establish accounts for these student athletes that once they complete a year or 2 years or get a diploma, that then they can receive the money. They wouldn't receive it directly while they're in school, but they could receive it afterwards. It would definitely be a much better system than today. Now,
let's bring in Steve joining us from Sun Prairie. Steve, hi.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call. Yeah, the question I have is, it's so obvious these athletes are the employees of the university. They're at their beck and call. They have to follow their work rules. How come? What specific in the law prevents the DOL from coming in and saying, you guys have to treat these people like employees? If there was a business that didn't pay their employees and only paid them a tuition, the DOL would be all over that. So
looking at labor laws. Yeah, what are the labor laws here is what Steve is wondering.
Well, what was kind of a shrewd thing to do by the NCAA 30, 40, 50 years ago was to create this term student athlete. And once they did that, they got away around a lot of the labor laws because they classified them as students just like any other student, a band member or any other student on campus. If the focus is on that they're students under these universities, which are nonprofit entities, which is kind of humorous in itself, that an athletic department like Michigan that sells out 100,000 plus every week for football is considered a nonprofit, but that's how they are in our tax codes. But as long as they're, the term student athlete survives, then that's kind of been their defense to this point.
Well, put them, you know, let's walk in their shoes. They're often having to do long hours, long plane rides, heading out of town on a Wednesday, trying to keep up with schoolwork, back on a Sunday, back to classes Monday, and the weight room. And, I mean, it sounds like the athlete part would certainly be getting in the way of the student part.
Well, definitely. I mean, there are studies that show these students are putting well over 40 hours a week into their sport activity. So it makes you truly admire the athletes that are able to be full-time students and do well in the classroom while still basically doing this full-time plus job. It's pretty amazing that some of them can pull it off, but for a lot of them, they fall well short and they don't take enough classes to actually graduate on time, and it's basically universities using them to make a lot of money. There's even a worse problem that's not talked about that often, is sometimes these athletes get injured while playing for their school, end up losing their scholarship, and while they might have the initial surgery, any follow-up health concerns or issues related to the injury that they was sustained while they were playing aren't covered, and these athletes are basically left on their own. That's one first step that needs to be taken care of to make this more fair.
March Madness is underway. It got us thinking about the debate over whether college student athletes should be paid or not. You can weigh in at 800-642-1234. We'll pick this discussion up in a minute on the Ideas Network. We're looking at the issue of whether college student athletes should be paid. You're with us on the morning show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. Talking about compensation in light of the NCAA Division I men's basketball tournament that's underway. Ticket sales for this year's 68 games are expected to add around $160 million to the NCAA's coffers. Four networks together paid the NCAA $10.8 billion in 2011 for a 14-year contract to broadcast the tournament. And that contract was extended until 2032. Another payment, $8.8 billion. You can weigh in at 800-642-1234. Do you think college athletes should receive some kind of compensation or not? Ken Reed is with us. He is sports policy director for League of Fans. Ken, there's been some pushback. At a recent event, former NBA star Charles Barkley was asked about compensation for college athletes. And here's a bit of what he had to say.
I've heard these idiots say, well, why don't we let guys sell their likeness? Yeah, that's great if you're a star. Listen, let me tell you something. If I'm a big, fat offensive lineman, and the quarterback is selling his jersey, and he's getting commercials, and the running back, and I'm actually doing all the work, how do you think that's going to go over in the locker room?
How do you think that's going to go over in the locker room when the quarterback is getting all the glory and the offensive lineman is doing all of the heavy lifting? What do you make of that argument?
Well, it makes a lot of sense. I wouldn't probably be that excited if I was that offensive lineman either, but it's the reality in our marketplace that some employees are more valuable than others. I mean, look at the NFL. The quarterbacks are making multi-million dollars and the linemen are making several hundred thousand dollars to block for them. So it's not an unusual situation in terms of any profession, whether it's football, sports, or any other industry. I think one of the things I'd like to touch on here is we mentioned Zion Williamson, the superstar at Duke, and he might get a shoe contract for $10.5 million or something. This kind of gets to Barkley's point too, but there was a study done at Drexel University, and this looks at what fair market value would be at the University of Texas. And this is for the 2011-2012 school year, so quite a while back. But the study found that the average or the true market value of just an average football player at Texas would be $567,000 $567,922 annually. There's plenty to go around. The Texas football team that year generated $103 million in revenue. The cost of their scholarships was $1.8 million. So $103 million in revenue, $1.8 million in scholarships, that leaves a lot of money left to that could potentially be given to athletes. And just a couple days ago, a minor, relatively minor conference, the American Athletic Conference, not one of the Power Five conferences that you hear about, struck a deal with ESPN for $1 billion for 12 years for media rights. Mm. That's the American Athletic Conference. That school's like Central Florida, South Florida, East Carolina. So not exactly the Big Ten or the ACC or the SEC. And
they're
going to get about $7 million per school.
Well, Ken, riddle me this. You know, we're talking about the heavy hitters here, football and basketball. What about athletes in other more low-profile sports? What do you do there?
Well, that's a good point.
And women's sports.
That's why the Olympic model would be an easier first step. I don't think it's the complete solution. But if you start putting athletes on payroll, then you have Title IX to deal with in terms of equity between the genders. It affects, the female athletes as well. As I wrote in a recent column, superstar swimmer Missy Franklin, who was a four-time gold medalist, wanted to have the college experience, and she enrolled at Cal Berkeley to swim for them, turning down lucrative professional offers. And because of the amateur system in place in college, she couldn't take any endorsement deals or anything. She ended up hurting her shoulder, never being able to recover back to her elite level, and the offers that she had before she went to Cal disappeared. And so she was hurt by the system as well.
Let's go to Jeff in Wrightstown. Jeff, hi.
Hi there. First of all, NFL offensive linemen make millions, not several hundred thousand dollars. In this argument to pay college athletes, you're using Zion Williams. Zion, who is in the vast minority of college student athletes. And the scholarships are paying a lot more for students who are getting a college education that's worth far more than what they bring to the table. Now, the millions of dollars that come to the university, now, that money goes to help pay for the programs that don't generate income. So if you want to spend all that money that comes in, then be willing to kiss goodbye the baseball, the women's basketball, and the programs that don't generate money.
So really, we're looking at the exceptions here, Ken Reed, and we've got to keep in mind Title IX.
Well, for one thing, I don't think football and basketball players should have to pay for swimmers and golfers to go to college. And second, there's every other student on campus, whether, say, you're on a music scholarship and you're getting your tuition paid, but you can play in a band on the weekend at the local club and they'll pay you for that and you can keep that money. But athletes can't take any money outside of their scholarship. So it's just unfair. It's a situation that's different than every other student on campus. And to his point about Zion Williamson, sure, not everyone's going to get a $10 million shoe contract, but as I mentioned in the study by Drexel, just an average football player at Texas in 2011-2012 was worth $567,000 if it was on pure market-based economics.
Let's bring in Stephanie in Madison now. Hi, Stephanie.
Good morning. I absolutely do not think that student athletes need to be paid. They have a huge privilege to be playing at that level and receiving free tuition and, other scholarships. Oftentimes they pay other students to do their work and, they're getting out without any debt, which is something that, is a huge value to kids our age these days.
So Stephanie brings the point that they are not going to be burdened with debt on the other end of their education.
Well, sure. But if you were making $500,000 or $1 million a year, you wouldn't be too burdened either. Now, like I mentioned many times, there's value, obviously, in a scholarship, but it's a capped compensation system that limits their true value of what they should be getting paid, or at least the opportunity to get paid.
Well, Ken, look into your crystal ball here. Going forward, do you expect the NCAA to hold on to this amateurism model as long as they can? What are they feeling here? What do we know?
Well, I don't think it's going to last that much longer. I mean, look at the Olympics. It blew up, and they couldn't make these athletes be true amateurs anymore. They finally allowed them to be compensated for their names, images, and likenesses. And I think the same thing is going to happen with colleges. It's just a matter of time. You see more things like the bill we brought up in California, the Fair Pay to Play Act. And the more that people realize that the millions and billions of dollars that are in college athletics and how small a proportion that goes to the actual producers of that product, I think eventually it'll just be a groundswell of we got to treat these people more fairly than they are being treated.
And in light of this huge college admissions scandal, some very wealthy parents have been implicated in efforts to basically buy spots for their children at elite schools. This has entangled, bribing college coaches and creating fake athletic profiles. What do you think needs to be the NCAA reaction?
Well, I think that's a pretty separate issue in terms of the only reason there's athletics involved in that bribery scandal with celebrities and wealthy people for these colleges is because they try to enhance their students' profile by saying they're an athlete, which a lot of these Ivy schools and Stanfords, et cetera, love seeing that kids that are athletic apply to their schools. And so they make up fake profiles. None of these kids are actually legitimate athletes. It's just a way to game the system. So I think that's different than how true college athletes are being compensated.
Ken, thank you for joining us.
Sure, I enjoyed it. It's a important discussion. I think one year we might see Duke or North Carolina team actually boycott or strike and not play, and CBS would obviously go crazy about that, and things would happen a lot quicker. But it's hard to organize.
Our brackets would all disappear. Ken Reed, Sports Policy Director for League of Fans Sports Reform Project. Just ahead, we talk about living to 100. No easy feat. We'll find out what these centenarians have on their mind. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. It's The Morning Show. You're listening to the Ideas Network.